I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
Smartcast. You are listening to a Live Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mint Climate Change Tracker, a podcast where we talk about the challenges posed by a rapidly heating planet. I'm your host, Bibek Bhattacharya. Folks, the monsoon is here, and with it are devastating floods. In Assam, 107 people have been killed, while 16.5 lakh people across 33 districts have been affected. Over 37,000 people have been displaced by the floods and are living in relief camps. Almost 93,000 hectares of agricultural land remains inundated. 90% of the Kaziranga National Park was flooded, resulting in the death of 130 animals. Of these, 13 were Kaziranga's famous one-horned rhinos. The situation is equally bad in Bihar, where many major rivers, including the flood-prone Kosi, are overflowing. 2.4 million people in the state have been affected by the floods, and what's more, due to excessive rainfall in the Himalayan foothills, the situation might get worse. And yet, despite the floods, the monsoon this year has actually been deficient. As of end July, according to the Indian Meteorological Department, there has been 11% less rain across the country than normal. Northwest India has had 30% less rain than normal, while there has been excess rain of 7.5% in northeastern India. Similarly, there has been 20% less rain in central India, while in southern India, there has been over 14% excessive rain. All this is a pattern which points towards the effects of climate change on the Indian monsoon. According to the Indian government's climate change assessment, since about 1950 or so, rainfall in India has declined by 6%. On the other hand, over the same period, rainfall variability has also increased. Variability means that there is a less probability of steady, moderate rain over a period of days. Instead, there are higher chances of either intense rain or no rain at all. According to many climate models, rainfall will actually increase across India by as much as 25% over the next 80 years due to global warming. But again, this will be wildly uneven rain. The prospect of one part of India drowning in floods while another reels from a drought is a pattern that's here to stay. However, let's not be too hasty to blame everything on climate change. As we know, climate change takes already bad situations and makes them much, much worse. Take the floods, for example. One of the main reasons why rivers flood so horribly during the monsoon is because of dams and embankments. In our bid to dam rivers, divert them, store their water, channel them for agriculture, we've grown to imagine that these very powerful and potent forces of nature are something we can control. Every year, whenever powerful Himalayan rivers like the Brahmaputra or the Kosi floods, we hear that embankments have been breached, that dams have been forced to release massive amounts of excess water. What we must realize is what we are hearing is an admission of failure. When you over-engineer a river, it will take its revenge. What's more, as Himalayan glaciers melt at a rapid pace due to warming, scientists predict that there will come a time in just a few decades when Himalayan rivers like the Ganga, the Brahmaputra, the Indus, and their tributaries will be flooding to an unimaginable extent. The only way we can stop all this is to rethink the way we live with nature, to rethink our dependence on oil and coal, our dependence on mega dams. to be more creative in our search for answers instead of just repeating what the British taught us to do, which is build dams. As usual, before treating a problem, we must diagnose it. Why are we still stuck in this vicious cycle of dams and embankments and floods? How do they create situations like what we are seeing in Assam and Bihar? Why does this happen every year? To answer these questions, I'll turn to my guest today, Amitanshu Acharya. Amitanshu is an independent researcher working on issues around water and development. Over the past decade, he has worked with hydrophilanthropic organizations, nonprofits, NGOs, and governments on projects as varied as participatory groundwater management and the use of transparency tools in development programs. Amitanshu has both studied and seen this problem with dams and embankments up close. Hi, Amitanshu. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you on here.
Hi, Vivek. Good to be here. And looking forward to this.
So, you know, while reading the news about the terrible floods in Assam, Bangladesh, Nepal, I was reminded of a story you wrote last year for Mint Lounge. It was called Engineering a Season of Floods. Now, for our listeners, Amitanshu wrote about how our obsessions with building dams and embankments, trying to control rivers like the Brahmaputra, are behind these annual floods. So, Amitanshu, for the sake of those who may not have read the story, what did you mean by engineering floods?
Right. So what I meant by that was that if you look into the history of managing rivers in India and managing flood,
right,
there has been this a propensity for trying to use infrastructure to control rivers and floods. And the problem lies with the fact that how we define what is a flood.
Mm-hmm.
And so what has happened, and which I argue in the piece, is that this is something that starts in the colonial period, because there is a need to tame and control rivers to increase the productivity of land.
Right.
And that is where the seed of controlling river comes from, using infrastructure like dams and embankments.
Mm-hmm.
And arguably during the colonial period, we didn't see as extensive system of embankments as dams as we see today in India.
Right.
But idea that embankments and dams could solve the problem, and in the case, what we mean by problem is the problem of generating revenue from land, is something that started off at that period. So what happened after independence was the idea that you could actually engineer rivers to perform a role that you wanted to perform was embedded in flood policy and river management. So we decided that we could use concrete to control the way a river moves and the way it kind of functions. And this, basically my argument was, it is this very mindset, this idea, which is a continuation of our colonial legacy of engineering, of caging rivers with concrete, that is actually one of the big reasons why we have so many floods happening today, especially in the uncertain climate that we live in.
So when you, as an observer, see these floods being played out every year, like almost like clockwork, don't you somehow feel that, like, you know, this is something that our policymakers should be paying more attention to?
So this is a very complex story. So let me see how I can, you know, put it across. One way I look at it is the thinking. Once you frame a solution in very binary terms, and the binary term is, there is a problem of floods, quote unquote, and the solution is in infrastructure, which is embankments and dams.
Right.
Now, as the problem expands, you keep expanding the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the game that we've been playing with rivers for the last 70 years.
Right.
And the reason for that is the boxing in of our science and engineering, and more engineering and less science, I would say, to addressing this problem. And there is a reason behind that. There is this whole thing about the politics of public works.
Mm-hmm.
When you engage with public works, when you engage with engineering solutions, there are material manifestations of that. People see the government is doing something.
Right.
So, whenever you have an embankment, people see, okay, something is being done. Now, if you were to take a non-infrastructural engagement with this, The power and might of the state, or the solution, the ability of the state to bring about solutions, would not be visible to the populace. So there is this whole element of visibility and infrastructure that strengthens the power of the state. The state needs to be seen to be doing something.
Right.
The political economy is that embankments are structures in which money is to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And breaches in embankments are nothing new. It is not happening in the last 5 years. From 1959 onwards, the COSI has breached several times.
Right.
And this, the breaching of embankments are a very complex issue. Part of it is construction, poor construction. Poor construction coming from corruption, because the contractors given the job would take a cut, would pay political masters, and then compromise on the quality of the embankment being constructed. Now, that is one part of the story. The other, of course, is the embankments are also structures that create upstream and downstream communities, create different kinds of water regimes. And often, just for survival or to get water into their farms, farmers themselves would breach embankments. This has happened repeatedly over time.
Right, right.
So, at the same time, over a period, and this is what's happening, especially in the floodplains of Bihar, you have a lot of landless people, people who are marginal farmers, for whom embankments, living with it for 70 years, they have become very dependent on. So, now what has happened is, people have not stopped building embankments. Of course, we may not be extending it in Bihar anymore per se. The more of the focus is going on strengthening it. But in Brahmaputra, a river which is like almost 3,000 kilometers in length, you have 5,000 kilometers of embankments already.
Right.
And another 4,000 to 5,000 is being planned. So there is huge amounts of money. 40,000 crores is the amount of money that's going to be spent for the new construction of embankment in the Brahmaputra. So there is huge amounts of money. So these are the things that also sustain the production of embankments and dams.
Right. Like these old bad habits, really. So, Aminangshu, now it seems like when it comes to the climate crisis, it's taking all these kind of foolhardy instances of human endeavor and making their outcomes even worse than what they used to be. Now, your work is in the realm of water, and you've done a fair bit of field work in that regard. What has been your experience?
So, there is definitely a change in the way nature is behaving. And especially in the floodplains, what people will tell you, that it is not that they are unaccustomed to floods. And they are, big flood was always predicted every time, once in 10 years, in the North Bihar.
Right.
But if you look from 2007 onwards, Vivek, you have 2007, 2008, 2011, 13, 16, 17, and now 2020. Severe floods happening in very short intervals, like within 1 year and 2 years.
Right.
And the reason for that, what is being claimed, and this is the our own meteorological department, which is now saying that what has happened is generally in the monsoon period, in that region in North Bihar, the expected rain is around 11 to 12 mm within 24 hours.
Right.
But they have noticed that has now increased to almost 300 mm to 400 mm.
Right.
Now, that's a massive amount of water coming in a 24-hour cycle. And this definitely creates a problem in terms of the amount of water rushing in through the third, second, different degrees of streams towards the main water bodies and the rivers. And then you have embankments and dams becoming infrastructural amplifiers of this.
Right.
So the moment the dam or a barrage can no longer hold, it is going beyond its, you know, capacity to hold that water, it will release that water. And when a dam releases water, that's a huge surge of volume of water going into a river.
Right.
A river that has been curtailed on both sides at high speed.
Right.
And that is the perfect setting for a really severe flood.
Finally, Amitangshu, what I'd like to ask is, what are you working on right now?
So, my research looks into the techno-mediation of nature. And basically, all of us engage with nature and nature's elements in some through the medium of technology now.
Okay.
I mean, sitting in Delhi, for example, you and I would be drinking Yamuna water enabled through a system of barrage, dams and you know, pipelines.
Right.
So I look at how technology mediates our understanding of nature, and especially I focus on water.
Okay.
So for example, embankments mediate people's understanding of a river, or even the quality of water in the river, or the quantity of water in the river.
Right.
Similarly, you know, there are smaller technologies like your the very own water filters we use at home, the reverse osmosis ones. Mm. They also mediate our understanding of what we know as water.
Right.
So I look at the heavy investments in technology that is taking place in the Capitalocene, which is restructuring human relationships with nature, creating new hybridities.
Right. Great. Thank you so much for joining me on the show, Amit Angshu. I'm afraid we are out of time. So thank you again, and all the best for your work.
Thank you so much, Vivek. Really happy to be here.
That was researcher Amit Angshu Acharya talking about how our obsession with controlling rivers is resulting in massive floods almost every year. As climate change bites, this will only get worse unless we do a radical rethink. That's it from me today. Join me next week as I speak to a special guest and also bring you up to speed with news of the climate crisis. Follow this podcast and my column in Mint Lounge on Twitter with the hashtag MintClimateTracker. And don't forget to subscribe on any of your favorite platforms, including Stitcher, Apple, Spotify, Google, and JioSaavn. Follow HD Smartcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram with the handle HD Smartcast. And write to us at podcasts@hindustantimes.com. I am Vivek Bhattacharya, and you've been listening to the Mint Climate Change Tracker. See you all next week. And remember, the climate clock is ticking.
This was a Live Mint production, brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.